Well, we're into the final quarter of 2025. It's the 1st of October, Wednesday, and I'm Alec Hogg. Welcome to your BizNews Briefing. In our briefing today, more headlines from Nati Mtetwa's death in Paris. AGOA expires, even though the White House wants it to continue. What was in Donald Trump's letter to the from the three amigos, we find out from Theo de Jager. The Economist tells us how to spot a genius. Spotify's founder Daniel Ek is standing aside. And on the local investment markets, we have news from two members of our Ricardo portfolio, Capitec and Orion Minerals. And in today's tailpiece, you don't want to miss Rossi Erasmus talking about why the Springboks have got a 16th player called South Africa. But let's get straight into it. The death of the South African ambassador to France in front of his hotel in Paris has caused a lot of headlines. The former police minister, Nati Mtetwa, is a man whose past is, well, let's call it colourful. Today, Chris Stain, my colleague, spoke to Jack Bloom. He's been serving in the Gauteng provincial parliament since 1994. He knows Mtetwa as a adversary politically and I guess as a colleague from being fellow politicians. This is what he had to say about this latest shock development.
Now, Jack, yesterday, a former minister of police died in a mysterious fall in Paris just a week after being named at the Madlanga Commission. That's Nati Mtetwa, who was now the ambassador in France. Have you heard anything more?
Well, you know, apparently he sent a letter to his wife that he was going to take his own life. I mean, it's very tragic. You can't help but sort of make an inference that perhaps it was what was coming up at the commission and that, he was possibly implicated. We don't know. There might have been personal issues. So, at the end of the day, we need to see what comes out from the commission. But the tentacles are all over the place. They really are. We have a mafia state. That's what we have. Waiting in the wings to take over, supposedly, from President Ramaphosa is, our deputy president, Paul Mashatile. Now, when he was in the Gauteng legislature, there was this infamous Alex Mafia, which the speaker at the time said, we're not allowed to say that word in the legislature. She banned the use of the term Alex Mafia. She said, because it implies a criminal network. Well, that's exactly what you're dealing with. We are dealing with a criminal network. I got chucked out of the Gauteng legislature sittings a couple of times because I insisted on saying, Alex Mafia. Why can't we say it? We've got free speech. And then I said that which may not be said. But now we are saying it. It is a mafia. The whole ANC is a criminal syndicate. I mean, that's actually what was said yesterday by a well-known political analyst. He said the ANC is a criminal syndicate itself. So here we have, if you get rid of one criminal syndicate, another takes over. But they seem to work together. That's what we've actually seen. So we still have a mystery syndicate, a large one, one of the big three that's going to be named. And now we talk about at the commission, we hear about the big five, drug cartels and the police are implicated. It's such a mess.
It certainly is a mess. And Paul O'Sullivan says, wait for my submission to the commission. There are going to be lots of fireworks there too, things that you just would never believe. Extraordinary time. But for the good to start, the old has to first die. And perhaps that's what South Africa's going through right now. Well, still on the local front, the 25-year-old Africa Growth and Opportunities Act, which inspired the duty-free access into the United States of 1,800 products from 32 African countries, including South Africa, and made immeasurable contributions to the countries through those exports and earning of foreign exchange, expired last night. The White House did say earlier this week that it anticipates a one-year extension for AGOA, but now we have a shutdown of the U.S. government because the Democrats are standing firm against certain things that the Republicans of Donald Trump want to push through. It is a mess here in South Africa, and no less a mess on Capitol Hill in Washington. Let's pick up, though, on the South African angle to this, again with my colleague Chris Dane, who spoke to Dr. Edward Minnie.
Never seen the relations, the diplomatic relations between the two countries at such a low point. Even during the dark years of apartheid, there was at least mutual respect, although disagreement about the policies. And, you know, the history's there. The former South African ambassador was declared a persona non grata because of statements he had made on social media platforms about the U.S. government, that lacks decorum. And that's certainly one of the aspects that we should embrace when we represent our country abroad. In the case of the U.S., in any country, having diplomatic relations, we conduct our affairs with a certain decorum. And that, unfortunately, has been lacking on the south of the South African representative. Of course, the South African Defense Force attaché was declared a persona non grata as well. That does not bode well. And I'm aware that the South African government has nominated a South African to represent South Africa here in the United States. But my understanding is that there's some baggage involved with this individual and others maybe in cabinet. As it regards to their connection with MTN, which is now involved in a court case here in the United States, as you may well be aware of, Iran is the foremost country supporting terrorism. So it's a state sponsor of terrorism. It behooves the South African government to take that into consideration as it conducts its international relations abroad. And it's my understanding that we have, in terms of our foreign policy, we've embraced this stance of being kind of a neutral country. But actions and words don't seem to measure up.
Dr. Minnie is the Professor of Strategic and Security Studies at the University of North Georgia, so based in the United States. Well, despite well-documented setbacks, progress is being made on a number of fronts. At the BizNews Investment Conference held last month, the Three Amigos, as we call them, that's Theodor Jager of the Southern African Agricultural Institute, Agri-Institute, Corne Mulder of the Freedom Front Plus, and Gerard Papenfuss of NIASA, had a wonderful session where they told us about their visit to the United States. And this little insert gives you an insight into what they wrote in the letter they were asked to draft, which was for Donald Trump, before they left for the U.S. I asked Theodor Jager what was in it.
He said, "You have no idea how hard it is to do business here under these conditions. You have no idea of the risks involved in this policy environment. And we need policy changes. And it's hard to bring it about through the political process here because of the numbers and the kind of government we have now. A coalition government or a government of national unity is always a weaker government. And we can't wait until the next election. So we need assistance from elsewhere too. But we also said we want to bring a value proposition. If your problem is in the USA and in Europe that people are flocking onto your shores because they are running away from poverty and hunger, we come from a continent where we know poverty and hunger. And we know nothing stops a hungry man, no fence, and no border, no sea. But we can keep them there because we have 370 years of experience to fight poverty and hunger. There's only one way to win this battle, and that's by creating wealth. There's no other way. And that nothing can create more wealth in a shorter space of time and on a broader basis than agriculture can. We have a network of South African, Zimbabwean, and Namibian farmers. There are 4,800 of them in a network spanning across 44 countries today. And we don't ask grants. We don't ask any handouts. If we could have access to commercial financing, because it's hard to find financing elsewhere in Africa. Remember, there's only four countries where you can own farmland south of the Sahara. And if you do not have a title deed, you do not have collateral for production loans. So help us to create the opportunities in Africa, and we can keep them there.
There is Zimbabwe one of those four countries?
No. It is South Africa and Namibia, where we have free title, and small pockets of Botswana, small pockets of Zambia. In the rest, our farmers who are farming there are using their South African farms to put up as collateral for production loans.
Robertson, a small town in the middle of nowhere where a wine farmer claims to have sold a Volkswagen up to e-buy cars.
A farmer.
What car did you really sell them?
A VW.
Right here in Robertson.
Small town, but we know about We Buy Cars.
Yeah, but what's a farmer doing with a VW up?
It was just a runaround.
Cool cover story. And I see you traded it in for this, like a double cab Danay. Were they all out of Rangers?
We Buy Cars, the easiest way to sell your car by far.
Discover Southern Africa with DCC Hotel Group, your trusted partner for a safe African safari. From Serengeti to Cape Town, explore luxury lodges, witness the Big Ten, and savor wines. Enjoy seamless booking, 24-hour support, book with confidence.
Well, on BizNews Premium, we regularly carry articles from our partners and our licenses, The Economist, The Financial Times of London, and a number of top international authors like Professor Mariana Mazzucato, who's well beloved of the South African government. In the latest episode of The Economist, or latest edition of The Economist, the cover story was How to Spot a Genius. So we've picked up from them how you do that.
The rewards for superstars are growing. The best surgeons and concert pianists have long commanded the highest fees and the patronage of the wealthy. Today, however, the superstar effect is on steroids. Some programmers in their 20s command 7, 8, or even 9-figure salaries. The number of artists on Spotify taking home more than $10 million a year has grown 3 times as much since 2017 as the number earning above $100,000. Lawyers' fees used to be shared out. Increasingly, the big money is going to the top earners at the best law firms, who massively outperform partners at their second-tier rivals. Ultra-cheap digital distribution creates bigger markets for individual creators, and the size of the potential rewards for winning the race in AI turns even the most extravagant individual salary into a rounding error. AI agents could strip out layers of the business process workers need to run today's firms, making it easier still for bright sparks to set up companies with ever smaller collections of clever people. Contests and scouting programs are surprisingly good at spotting early promise. Gold medal winners at international maths Olympiads are 50 times more likely to go on to win a big science prize than undergraduates at MIT. Half the founders of OpenAI cut their teeth in the contest, but most countries are not systematic about talent. America is an example of what to avoid. Built on immigration with a culture of meritocracy and top-ranking universities, it should win the tussle for talent. An obsession with diversity, equity, and inclusion in the early 2020s stalled programs for gifted students. Donald Trump is adding to the missteps. His administration has just announced drastically higher fees for the H-1B visa program, through which many researchers and techies enter America. And a vindictive crackdown on Harvard and other elite universities has jeopardized funding for research and the scope to take foreign students. America's errors are a chance for other countries to catch up. China is introducing a visa scheme for young foreign scientists and technologists. Britain may ditch visa fees for skilled arrivals altogether. France hopes to attract foreign researchers who move. That is fine so far as it goes, but it is half-hearted. Talent is waiting to be tapped. The gains would be immense. When will the world wake up?
Well, why doesn't South Africa wake up? Why aren't we the America of our continent? Just ask yourself that. There is so much talent on this continent who would love to come through to work, live, and contribute to South Africa, and of course learn here as well from our excellent universities. But it seems like we're going the other direction, the direction that much of the world is going in against immigrants. Well, let's hope that the message does land in the right places. This is a world where genius is being better rewarded and is what you should be attracting, making your country a magnet for it, not a repellent. On the subject of geniuses, the founder and longtime leader of Spotify, a gent by the name of Daniel Ek, has decided to reduce his responsibilities. This is big news in the media world, and indeed for anybody amongst those hundreds of millions who use Spotify. This morning's FT News briefing took a close look at it.
A new era for Spotify is on the horizon. Daniel Ek, the streaming giant's founder, is stepping down as CEO after 19 years. He'll become executive chair and split the chief executive position between his top two lieutenants. Here to tell us what this means for the company is the FT's global media editor, Dan Thomas. Hi, Dan.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. So tell me a little bit about this leadership change. Who are the new co-CEOs?
Yeah, well, this is a massive move for the global music streaming industry. You know, Daniel Ek's been at the forefront of transforming how people consume music and pay for music for the last 20 years. So we sort of developed two individuals underneath him who have been at Spotify for a long time. You have Alex Nordstrom, who's the co-president and chief business officer. He effectively is the business brains. He sits above the revenue side of things, advertising, podcasts, products. And then on the other side, you have Gustav Soderstrom, who's the co-president, but he's more on the product and technology side. So effectively, if you've got the sort of Daniel Ek, who's got this kind of dream of revolutionizing the music industry, at the same time, he's got this great technology brain. They effectively are him combined, if you like.
You mentioned the impact that Ek has made on the music industry. This feels like a really big moment for Spotify, is a founder stepping down after two decades running the company. What kind of legacy does Ek leave at Spotify?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's very unusual, I think, for a founder to almost stay that long, particularly a company which has been so successful as Spotify has been. You know, music streaming now accounts for 80% of recorded music revenues in the US alone. It's, you know, it's difficult to remember that 20 years ago, this was a fledgling startup. You know, you had the end of the Napster era, music labels were on their knees, they weren't making money, they couldn't quite get their heads around the next stage of monetization of music. The physical stuff was dying down, piracy was rampant. And here comes Daniel Ek, and he gave them a solution. It has to be said, though, you know, we're talking about him moving up. So he still is an executive chairman. of the company. He's still a big shareholder as well, about 14% of the company. Still will clearly work with the two new chaps who are coming through and leading the group on a day-to-day basis. But this is a moment still.
Dan Thomas is the FT's global media editor. Thanks, Dan.
Thank you.
Yeah, fascinating story, that one. Well, in the South African investment markets, we had financial results today from one of the favorites of investors on the JSE, and indeed a stock that is in the Ricardo portfolio. We launched the Ricardo portfolio yesterday when we retired the Web Trader portfolio, which was 10 years and 10 months old, and which had gone from being worth 2.25 million to just over 20 million rand. That's due to a compound annual growth rate of 21.7%. Just shows you what compounding does in the investment markets. But getting on to Capitec, their half-year results to the end of August were released today. The share price was up 2%, which tells you that the market liked them. Total profit for the period up 20%. Interest income 15% higher, and 14% growth in net transaction and commission income. And their loans and advances, that's where banks make their money, by lending out to people. That was up by 14% in a very, well, soggy economy. Those are quite exceptional numbers. On the other side, if you want to be picky about the numbers, the operating cash flow was down by two-thirds. And that shows that it's a complex picture when you have a look at that. Credit impairments, which is the bad debt write-offs, were 7% higher, and operating expenses 14% higher. All of that's not really a problem, because on the one hand, you've got revenues growing or profits growing 20%. So your operating expenses, well, you'd expect them to grow as well. And 14%, as long as it's lower than that, things are good. And credit impairments up 7% when you compare that with 14% growth in your book or in the total loans. Well, that's why shareholders and investors generally were happy, and the shares a little higher after the first half of their financial year. Another member of the Ricardo portfolio, Orion Minerals, released its annual report today. This one's share price was down slightly from 20 cents to 19 cents, but it's a ticky stock, as we used to call them in the olden days. And that means not really, you know, one cent movement and 20 cents is a 5% decline. Nothing to get terribly excited about. Very good news here is that it is transitioning from being an explorer into a producer of copper, which is the hottest mineral in the world at the moment, and it's in the Northern Cape here in South Africa. The definitive feasibility studies have been completed for both of the mines that it's going to be operating. Prieska, the flagship, by far the bigger one of the two, and Okiep, the combined net present value of the mines, if you take it on the 13 years that Prieska's mine will be able to operate at the investigation that's been done so far, there could be a lot more minerals in the area, but they're working on a conservative basis, is 640 million Aussie dollars. They listed in Australia as well as here on the JSE and report in Aussie dollars. And that is, well, about treble the current share price. So there's a lot of opportunities still there. A post financial year announcement of support from Glencore, which is putting $250 million into the Orion Minerals hat, means that the Prieska mine will be able to produce its first copper again. It's an old mine. It's being reopened by December 2026. On the downside, the financials show that the company is still operating at a loss, as you expect when a company is ramping up to production. It lost 15 million Aussie dollars in the past financial year. Well, that's it brings us up to our little bit of fun, as we always have at the end of the briefing. And today we're going back into the rugby environment, and why not after that splendid match over the weekend. And here's why South Africa always has more than 15 men on the field at any one time.
No, we are just so fortunate. And again, Other countries doesn't have Black Friday. Other countries doesn't have people wearing jerseys to school. Other countries doesn't have competitions between school who can send the best footage or video clip to the Springboks, you know. Other countries don't get to malls together. Tiger Valley Mall was packed, you know, Century City was packed. Oh, people make a plan, man. You can see from that Monday, the messages we get, it's, we've got really something. I don't think any other country in the world have that luxury of seeing people pulling together for one team like we do have. So, and yeah, I would like to, not like to be seen. I know what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to do everything possible with the talent that we have and the people that we have and the knowledge that we have in different kinds of people. I don't always want to put it to race or to color. I want to put it to characters. I want to put it to culture. I want to put it to men and women in team and 15 million people supporting a team out of 60 million people, you know. And for me, that togetherness of listen, nobody's more important than anybody else. You know, a great mechanic is a great mechanic. I'm an awful mechanic. I might be a great coach or a good coach. But I've got respect for the guy who fixed my car, you know. So, you know, I don't think one must blow it up. What we're trying to do is just something that God blessed you with. And I would like people to know that it's definitely not for accolades and things that we're doing this. The feeling of when you see people smiling, because we're working together, we're believing in something, the same thing. We can align, we can mind each other, we can care about each other. For me, that pretty much makes my heart pretty warm.
And it makes our heart warm as well, Rossi, what you are giving to the nation. You and the boys, you and the Booker. Whenever we watch, I think this Saturday is going to be absolutely no different. We're there with you and the 16th or 17th or even 18th player on the field. Well, that's been your briefing for today. Back again tomorrow. Until then, cheerio.